Chapter 10. Was saying, said the intruder, without attending to any interrogatives, was saying that I am not at all pushed for time, that the business upon which I took the liberty of calling is of no pressing importance, in short, that I can very well wait until you have finished your exposition.
Why exposition?
There now. How do you know? How came you to understand that I was writing an exposition?
Good God!
Hush! Replied the figure, in a shrill undertone, and, arising quickly from the bed, he made a single step toward our hero, while an iron lamp that depended overhead swung convulsively back from his approach. The philosopher's amazement did not prevent a narrow scrutiny of the stranger's dress and appearance. The outlines of his figure, exceedingly lean, but much above the common height, were rendered minutely distinct by means of a faded suit of black cloth which fitted tight to the skin, but was otherwise cut very much in the style of a century ago. These garments had evidently been intended for a much shorter person than their present owner. His ankles and wrists were left naked for several inches. In his shoes, however, a pair of very brilliant buckles gave the lie to the extreme poverty implied by the other portions of his dress. His head was bare, and entirely bald, with the exception of a hinder part, from which depended a queue of considerable length. A pair of green spectacles, with side glasses, protected his eyes from the influence of the light, and at the same time, prevented our hero from ascertaining either their color or their conformation. About the entire person there was no evidence of a shirt, but a white cravat, of filthy appearance, was tied with extreme precision around the throat, and the ends hanging down formally side by side, gave, although I dare say unintentionally, the idea of an ecclesiastic. Indeed, many other points both in his appearance and demeanor might have very well sustained a conception of that nature. Over his left ear, he carried, after the fashion of a modern clerk, an instrument resembling the stylus of the ancients. In a breast pocket of his coat appeared conspicuously a small black volume fastened with clasps of steel. This book, whether accidentally or not, was so turned outwardly from the person as to discover the words "Itual Catholic" in white letters upon the back. His entire physiognomy was interestingly saturnine, even cadaverously pale. The forehead was lofty and deeply furrowed with the ridges of contemplation. The corners of the mouth were drawn down into an expression of the most submissive humility. There was also a clasping of the hands, as he stepped toward our hero a deep sigh, and altogether a look of such utter sanctity as could not have failed to be unequivocally prepossessing. Every shadow of anger faded from the countenance of the metaphysician, as, having completed a satisfactory survey of his visitor's person, he shook him cordially by the hand, and conducted him to a seat. There would, however, be a radical error in attributing this instantaneous transition of feeling in the philosopher to any one of those causes which might naturally be supposed to have had an influence. Indeed, Pierre Bonbon, from what I have been able to understand of his disposition, was of all men the least likely to be imposed upon by any speciousness of exterior deportment. It was impossible that so accurate an observer of men and things should have failed to discover, upon the moment, the real character of the personage who had thus intruded upon his hospitality. To say no more, the conformation of his visitor's feet was sufficiently remarkable. He maintained lightly upon his head an inordinately tall hat. There was a tremulous swelling about the hinder part of his breeches, and the vibration of his coattail was a palpable fact. Judge, then, with what feelings of satisfaction our hero found himself thrown thus at once into the society of a person for whom he had at all times entertained the most unqualified respect. He was, however, too much of the diplomatist to let escape him any intimation of his suspicions in regard to the true state of affairs. It was not his cue to appear at all conscious of the high honor he thus unexpectedly enjoyed. But, by leading his guest into the conversation, to
to elicit some important ethical ideas, which might, in obtaining a place in his contemplated publication, enlighten the human race, and at the same time, immortalize himself. Ideas which, I should have added, his visitor's great age, and well-known proficiency in the science of morals, might very well have enabled him to afford. Actuated by these enlightened views, our hero bade the gentleman sit down, while he himself took occasion to throw some faggots upon the fire, and place upon the now re-established table some bottles of Mausu. Having quickly completed these operations, he drew his chair vis-a-vis to his companions, and waited until the latter should open the conversation. But plans even the most skillfully matured are often thwarted in the outset of their application, and the restaurateur found himself nonplussed by the very first words of his visitor's speech. "See, you know me, Bon Bon," said he. "Ha, ha, ha. He, I. Ho, ho, ho. Who. And the devil, dropping at once the sanctity of his demeanor, opened to its fullest extent a mouth from ear to ear, so as to display a set of jagged and fang-like teeth, and, throwing back his head, laughed long, loudly, wickedly, and uproariously, while the black dog, crouching down upon his haunches, joined lustily in the chorus, and the tabby cat, flying off at a tangent, stood up on end, and shrieked in the farthest corner of the apartment. Not so the philosopher. He was too much a man of the world either to laugh like the dog, or by shrieks to betray the indecorous trepidation of the cat. It must be confessed, he felt a little astonishment to see the white letters which formed the words "Actual Catholic" on the book in his guest's pocket, momently changing both their color and their import, and in a few seconds, in place of the original title, the words "Rigueur des Condoms" blazed forth in characters of red. This startling circumstance, when Bon Bon replied to his visitor's remark, imparted to his manner an air of embarrassment which probably might not otherwise have been observed. "Hi, sir," said the philosopher. "Why, sir, to speak sincerely, I imagine I have some very faint idea of the remarkable honor." "H. Ah, yes. Very well," interrupted his majesty. "Say no more, I see how it is." And hereupon, taking off his green spectacles, he wiped the glasses carefully with the sleeve of his coat, and deposited them in his pocket. If Bon Bon had been astonished at the incident of the book, his amazement was now much increased by the spectacle which here presented itself to view. In raising his eyes, with a strong feeling of curiosity, to ascertain the color of his guests, he found them by no means black, as he had anticipated, nor gray, as might have been imagined, nor yet hazel, nor blue, nor indeed yellow, nor red, nor purple, nor white, nor green, nor any other color in the heavens above, or in the earth beneath, or in the waters under the earth. In short, Pierre Bon Bon not only saw plainly that his majesty had no eyes whatsoever, but could discover no indications of their having existed at any previous period, for the space where eyes should naturally have been was, I am constrained to say, simply a dead level of flesh. It was not in the nature of the metaphysician to forbear making some inquiry into the sources of so strange a phenomenon, and the reply of his majesty was at once prompt, dignified, and satisfactory. "Yes, my dear Bon Bon eyes. Did you say? Oh. Ah. I perceive. The ridiculous prints, which are in circulation, have given you a false idea of my personal appearance? Eyes. True. Eyes, Pierre Bon Bon, are very well in their proper place. That, you would say, is the head? Right, the head of a worm. To you, likewise, these optics are indispensable, yet I will convince you that my vision is more penetrating than your own. There is a cat I see in the corner, a pretty cat. Look at her, observe her well. Now, Bon Bon, do you behold the ideas, the reflections which are being engendered in her pericranium? There it is, now you do not. She is thinking we admire the length of her tail and the profundity of her mind. S.E. has just concluded that I am the most distinguished of ecclesiastics, and that you are the most superficial of metaphysicians. Thus you see I am not altogether blind, but to one of my profession, the eyes you speak of would be merely an encumbrance, liable at any time to be put out by a toasting iron or a pitchfork. To you, I allow, these optical affairs are indispensable. Endeavor, bon bon, to use them well. My vision is the soul. Hereupon the guest helped himself to the wine upon the table, and pouring out a bumper for Bon Bon, requested him to drink it without scruple, and make himself perfectly at home. Clever book that of yours, Pierre, resumed his majesty, tapping our friend knowingly upon the shoulder, as the latter put down his glass after a thorough compliance with his visitor's injunction. A clever book that of yours, upon my honor. It's a work after my own heart. Your arrangement of the matter, I think, however, might be improved, and many of your notions remind me of Aristotle. That philosopher was one of my most intimate acquaintances. I liked him as much for his terrible ill temper as for his happy knack at making a blunder. There is only one solid truth in all that he has written, and for that I gave him the hint out of pure compassion for his absurdity. I suppose, Pierre Bon Bon, you very well know to what divine moral truth I am alluding? And it say that I, indeed, why it was I who told Aristotle that by sneezing, men expelled superfluous ideas through the proboscis. Which is hiccup, undoubtedly the case, said the metaphysician, while he poured out for himself another bumper of Mausu, and offered his snuff box to the fingers of his visitor. Here was Plato too, continued his majesty, modestly declining the snuff box and the compliment it implied. Here was Plato too, for whom I, at one time, felt all the affection of a friend. You knew Plato, Bon Bon? Ah, no, I beg a thousand pardons. He met me at Athens, one day, in the Parthenon, and told me he was distressed for an idea. I bade him write down that O nous estin allos. He said that he would do so, and went home, while I stepped over to the pyramids. But my conscience smote me for having uttered a truth, even to aid a friend, and hastening back to Athens, I arrived behind the philosopher's chair as he was ending the allos. Apostrophe, iving the lambda a Philip with my finger, I turned it upside down. So the sentence now read O nous estin agos, and is, you perceive, the fundamental doctrines in his metaphysics. Are you ever at Rome? Asked the restaurateur, as he finished his second bottle of Mausu, and drew from the closet a larger supply of Chambertin. But once, Monsieur Bon Bon, but once. There was a time, said the devil, as if reciting some passage from a book. Here was a time, when occurred an anarchy of 5 years, during which the Republic, bereft of all its officers, had no magistracy besides the tribunes of the people, and these were not legally vested with any degree of executive power at that time. Monsieur Bon Bon, at that time only I was in Rome, and I have no earthly acquaintance, consequently, with any of its philosophy. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk 2, ills écrivain sur la philosophie Cicero, Lucretius, Seneca, mais qu'est la philosophie grecque. Condorcet. Hat do you think of what do you think of hiccup? Epicurus? Hat do I think of whom? Said the devil, in astonishment. You cannot surely mean to find any fault with Epicurus. What do I think of Epicurus? Do you mean me, sir? I am Epicurus. I am the same philosopher who wrote each of the 300 treatises commemorated by Diogenes Laertius. Hat's a lie, said the metaphysician, for the wine had gotten a little into his head. Very well, sir. Very well, indeed, sir, said his majesty, apparently much flattered. That's a lie, repeated the restaurateur, dogmatically. That's a hiccup. A lie. Well, have it your own way, said the devil, pacifically, and Bon Bon, having beaten his majesty at argument, thought it his duty to conclude a second bottle of Chambertin. As I was saying, resumed the visitor, as I was observing a little while ago, there are some very outre notions in that book of yours, Monsieur Bonbon.
What, for instance, do you mean by all that humbug about the soul?
Pray, sir, what is the soul?
He hiccup.
Soul, replied the metaphysician, referring to his MS, is undoubtedly,
oh, sir.
Dubitably,
oh, sir.
Disputably,
oh, sir.
Vitantly,
oh, sir.
Controvertibly,
oh, sir.
Hiccup.
Oh, sir.
And beyond all question, oh, sir, the soul is no such thing. Here the philosopher, looking daggers, took occasion to make an end, upon the spot, of his third bottle of Chamberton.
And hiccup.
Pray, sir, what is it?
That is neither here nor there, Monsieur Bonbon, replied his majesty, musingly.
I have tasted, that is to say, I have known some very bad souls, and some too pretty good ones.
Here he smacked his lips, and, having unconsciously let fall his hand upon the volume in his pocket, was seized with a violent fit of sneezing.
He continued. Here was the soul of Cratinus Passable, Aristophanes Racy, Plato exquisite, not dear Plato, but Plato the comic poet. Here Plato would have turned the stomach of Cerberus Faw.
Then let me see. There were Nevius, and Andronicus, and Plautus, and Terentius.
Then there were Lucilius, and Catullus, and Naso, and Quintus Flaccus, dear Quinty, as I called him, when he sung a secular for my amusement, while I toasted him, in pure good humor, on a fork. But they want flavor, these Romans. One fat Greek is worth a dozen of them, and besides will keep, which cannot be said of a queerite. Let us taste your sodern.
Bonbon had by this time made up his mind, to nil admirer I and endeavored to hand down the bottles in question.
He was, however, conscious of a strange sound in the room like the wagging of a tail. Of this, although extremely indecent in his majesty, the philosopher took no notice, simply kicking the dog, and requesting him to be quiet. The visitor continued.
Found that Horace tasted very much like Aristotle. You know I am fond of variety.
Terentius I could not have told from Menander.
Naso, to my astonishment, was Nicander in disguise.
Virgilius had a strong twang of Theocritus.
Martial put me much in mind of Archilochus, and Titus Livius was positively Polybius and none other.
Hiccup. Here replied Bonbon, and his majesty proceeded.
But if I have a penchant, Monsieur Bonbon, if I have a penchant, it is for a philosopher.
Yet, let me tell you, sir, it is not every dev, I mean it is not every gentleman who knows how to choose a philosopher.
Long ones are not good. And the best, if not carefully shelled, are apt to be a little rancid on account of the gall.
Held. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.